The centralization of power slows everything down. Your government can take whatever money they want. If you understand why we saw this happening, then we can also understand what's going to happen as we continue. They can't allow people to escape their currency, their capital controls. And so the last stage of every empire is always capital controls. If we could get all of our brains and feed it into this giant AI cloud, that the AI cloud could manage everything for us.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 51 of the Wake Up Podcast. So this is part of the, I guess, season four, and I've got Giggles and Pled Music helping me put everything together. So you're going to find the quality of audio is better, the quality of video is going to be better, and soon enough, we're going to be on podcasting 2.0, so you can send some sats our way for our contribution to Bitcoin. Anyway. On this episode, I've got Mark Moss joining me, good friend of mine. We have done a few shows together. We've been on multiple trips together. And his event, Market Disruptors Live, is coming up in Miami on, it's going to be between the 12th and the 14th of November. So there will be a link in the show notes so that you can get your ass over there. This is going to be a super, super fucking important event. You're going to have myself there, of course. That's why it's important. But more importantly, actually, there'll be people like Joel there. I'm bringing a bunch of sovereign individuals there, and we're going to actually spend 2 days not just talking about shit, that we ways in which we can become sovereign. So like Katie will be there talking about passports, Joel about the cattle regenerative farming and the bunkers and everything that he wants to do there. I'll be talking about Bitcoin, of course. Gerald Salente will be there, George Gammon, everyone's going to be there. But really the goal here is to create the key networks with individuals that are thinking the same, that want to set themselves up for the next couple of years so that they end up in a fucking gulag. So that's gonna be the premise of the event. So you need to get your ass there. I'll have a link in the show notes. This isn't just a random advertisement. It's relevant to the discussion we're gonna have today, because today's podcast episode with Mark Moss is literally called I Told You So. And it's not I Told You So in some, you know, oh yeah, I know better than you and I'm better than you because I know better than you. It is a reminder that when you apply some first principles thinking to particular problem sets, you can actually extrapolate where things are going to end up. And you may not be able to exactly predict the future, but you can see, you know, like direction determines destiny. And if you can understand the direction of the actions and the decisions that are being made, you can create a bit of an estimate there about where the destination is. And here we are, the world's gone categorically fucking mad. Things are broken all over the place. And me and Mark are going to have a discussion here about all of those things and how to potentially fix this, and how we can think more critically and more deeply so that this kind of monstrosity and stupidity doesn't happen again. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the new format. I hope you enjoy the quality. If you are appreciating that, drop us some love, subscribe to the channel. We'll be streaming sats soon, as I mentioned. And if you do find this episode valuable, let us know and see if you can make your way out to Miami for the conference. We'd love to see you all there. Thank you. And welcome to episode 51 of the Wake Up Podcast. And I have a good friend of mine joining me today. We've done a partial pod with Wake Up before, with Mark on it. And then I've done a couple with you, actually. So, dude, yep. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alex. Always a pleasure to hang out and talk to you. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this just before we kick off, this episode is going to be called I Told You So. And it's not so that we can gloat. It's not so that we can, you know, blow smoke up our assholes and, you know, try and sniff our own fucking farts and, you know, tell people how good we are. It's like, it's to remind people what we've been saying all along and why it's not just random fear mongering, right? Like it's not, you know, the
the position people like, you know, myself and Mark and many others have taken is not just to freak you the fuck out and sound like, you know, crazy conspiracy theorists, you know. So Mark runs an incredible YouTube channel called Market Disruptors. He's now also running it's technically a Bitcoin segment, right, on iHeartRadio.
Yeah, just Bitcoin, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Incredible. So you know, we're going to, you know, Mark's doing incredible work getting it into that. But yeah, the premise of this episode is to remind people of stuff we've said, and it really ties in nicely. Mark, you will not have seen this yet, but episode 50, I did something interesting. Is I did a throwback from a interview that I did for the Value of Bitcoin conference in late May, early June of 2020. And it never got published because I just, like, I was supposed to talk about Bitcoin, but I just went on this rant about how ridiculous the lockdowns are and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, people at the conference, like, it was a virtual conference, they all freaked out. He's like, oh, he's too extreme. What's he talking about? Vaccine mandates aren't going to happen. Get him off the stage and all this sort of stuff. The organizers never published it. They're like, we can't publish this. We're going to lose all our sponsors. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Just send it to me and I'll do something with it. So anyway, I decided, like, to sort of finish the previous series, like close out episode 50 with a throwback. So when you started explaining, you know, what we're going to run through on this episode, I was like, fuck, this is a perfect lead-in from that episode, which is another version of fucking told you so, you know, and are you going to do something about it now, or are you going to still rest on your laurels? So anyway.
The one reason I would add to that is the I told you so isn't about gloating, as you've already made the case. I told you so is really, why did we know this was going to happen? What did we see that was causing this? But more importantly, if we understand why we saw this happening, then we can also understand what's going to happen as we continue. And so it's not just about like, hey, let's just gloat, we were right. No, it's about understanding it so we can figure out where we're going in the future.
Absolutely. And then hopefully slap some sense into a few people so that we don't continue down this path. Like literally this morning, so funny. I woke up, went to the bathroom, and I'm like checking, you know, who the hell's messaging me. And I saw a message from my brother. And people who follow this podcast know that I've, you know, had dramas with my brother. He's like a Talib Maxi. But you know, he's never cared about the lockdowns. Like, oh yeah, whatever, bro. You know, people can wear masks if they want. You know, like he started off like pro mask, then he like didn't care. And then he's like, you know, the vaccines, they're not going to kill people. What are you talking about? As if Bill Gates is going around trying to like, you know, do all this. Now he's like, bro, I'm trying to look for a jab card, this and that. Like, so now I get this message this morning and he's like, what the fuck is wrong with this country? You know, fuck these idiots. I'm trying to go out and get a fucking dinner at, you know, the new casino that was built there, which they spent $2.5 billion building in this new area in the harbor in Sydney called Barangaroo. And they're like, in order to walk in, you have to wear a mask, you have to be vaccinated, you have to, you know, wear a particular thing. He's like, what's wrong with these fucking idiots? Do they not want money? He's like, fucking fuck this country. And so what I messaged him, I said, literally, I said, dude, it's funny. Now you're starting to care that it's affecting you. And I told you to fucking care back when they tried to institute mask mandates in the first place.
Right.
And his words were exactly, I don't give a fuck, bro. It doesn't affect me. That was his exact words back then.
Yeah.
Now it's too fucking late. Now it's engulfed every other part of his life where he can't fucking do anything. And now he's scrambling, trying to think about how to get out of the country. And you know what I told him, I said, look, if you manage to get out, remember why you got the fuck out. And when you see this shit coming for you, because it's going to come for you wherever you go, remember to speak the fuck up and not be some pussy who's like, oh yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what the fuck happens in the world. What am I going to do anyway?
The thing about that I just think about as you're telling that story is for people to think like this doesn't affect me. They're thinking too small. And I hate to say, you know, it's selfish. They just probably don't understand the bigger picture, but they don't understand the knock-on effects that happen. So for example, in the United States last month, the report came out, I think 2 days ago, we had the largest amount of people quitting their jobs ever in history. 4.6 million people walked out on their jobs last month in the United States. Oh, wow. Why? Oh, is it because we're forcing them to do things they don't want to do? They don't want to put their health at risk? 4.6 million people walked out of their jobs. I don't care. What do I freaking care? Go ahead, quit your job. Oh, well, they're the guys that are driving the trucks, the guys that are cooking the food, the guys that are unloading ships at the harbor. the guys that are the doctors at the hospitals, you do friggin' care. So now we're seeing massive shortages of how hospital staff all around the country. They're declaring state of emergencies. In New York, they're bringing in National Guard. They're turning away people in the hospital for surgeries. Even maternity wards can't have babies right now. Somehow you can put babies on hold, I guess. I didn't know that. But they can't even have babies right now because they don't have the staff. There's thousands of ships sitting off the harbor in LA and Long Beach. The Biden administration said they're going to come and do some now. They're going to fix it, apparently, and they're going to try to get them running 24/7. But guess what? People don't want to work. They're quitting their jobs. So anybody taking that response, which is, it doesn't affect me, so what? No, it does affect you. Everybody will be affected by this.
It reminds me of that, the Neumüller poem, right? Or whatever it was, the quote, which is, first they came for the socialists, then I wasn't one of them. So, I didn't care. Then they came for the Christians, and then they came for the Jews. And then,
when they came for me, nobody was there to speak up.
Speak for me. Yeah, exactly. So I'm butchering it, but I'll put it in the show notes for people, because it literally, I feel like we've been taking crazy pills almost for the last, year and a half, like banging on about this specifically, but more broadly for 5, 10, 15 years, whatever we've, as a group sort of been talking about this, like from the early days of the Gerald Celentes to the Max Kaisers, to the Bitcoiners, to the fucking, what's his name? Alex Jones. Like, I mean,
even Peter Schiff, who's an enemy of Bitcoin today, but he's been banging the drum on what was going to happen with these runaway monetary policies for decades.
Yeah. It just so reminds me of Atlas Shrugged. This is like the book playing out.
We're like literally watching it.
We are literally in the book at the moment. And it's just so funny because as things are falling apart, like in the book, Ayn Rand, really perfectly and eloquently writes up how the bumbling fools in government, how they get together and then they start to provide these services with, through force, like in terms of what Biden's doing with the ships that are all backed up in Long Beach, et cetera, is like they bring the army, they bring what they know to try and do something, but they're all incompetent. They don't know what they're doing anyway. So the people with the skill are all gone. So the thing falls apart, and these idiots are so dumb. They think that, we can do everything. It's like that they don't appreciate the skill of each of the individuals that are doing the things they're doing. And they're just completely fucking tone deaf.
Yeah. And what's even worse is that they don't, two things. One, they can't learn. I guess they can't learn. That's the problem. And what do I mean by that? They can't learn from other people's mistakes and they can't learn from their own. So for example, Venezuela, more oil than anyone in the world, more oil than Saudi Arabia, used to be one of the most wealthiest nations in the world. Well, when they decided to go socialist, they decided instead of having these, rich oil tycoons that know everything about energy run the energy, I'm going to put my brother, I'm going to put my friend, my cronies in. Well, they don't know anything about running energy. And guess what happened? It all fell apart today. They can't even get energy out of the ground. I mean, they're literally sitting on more than anybody, but they can't do it. So we didn't learn from that. But then even what's going on today, they're not learning. There's no feedback loop, right? There's no accountability. And so they just continue to double down on insane policies without ever learning or recognizing the problem.
Yeah. This echoes what we spoke in the last episode about feedback loops, right? Is like without economic consequence, you can go ahead and you can do whatever you want. You don't know whether what you're doing is right or wrong, and you can lie to yourself. Like literally, we're living in one big bad episode of the Twilight Zone where everything's a lie. Nothing makes sense. Nothing is real. It's like, oh yeah, people are starving. Okay, so let's just change the definition of starvation. Okay, people are not starving anymore. It's like that's the level of dumbness we've gotten to.
I mean, they're literally, this term gaslighting has started to get pretty popular. They're literally just lying to your face, telling you what you're seeing is not real. Mm-hmm. And I think, half the population seems to be sleepwalking through this, just hypnotized by this, mesmerized by it, and I guess believing it. But then half the people are going, it's creating this cognitive dissonance where they're like, wait a minute, like this isn't right. And we're starting to see massive pushback on this. One of the best things I've seen in a while, I don't tune in on a regular basis at all, but Tucker Carlson on Fox did this monologue 2 days ago where the whole thing was tongue in cheek. And he was talking about how this Russian disinformation, everything is Russian disinformation today. And it was an amazing piece. Like I said, I'm not a regular watcher, but 2 days ago, I'd recommend that piece. But he was talking about how Biden is the most loved president ever in history. That's what they tell us all the time. The highest approval rating, the most people that voted for him, all these things. But yet all around the country, people are just randomly breaking out in praise of Biden. So he showed a monologue of, or a collage of all these stadiums in different states where the entire football stadium, 50,000 people are chanting how much they love Biden. You've seen the meme going around. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. Yeah.
Okay. They're not saying Brandon. They're not saying that. And he showed a series of over and over. I'm talking 50,000 people, stadiums around the country, state, all breaking out into these chants. There's not a lot of love for that guy, but yet they say there is. There's, and even they got gaslit and saying the CNBC reporter said, "Oh, do you hear them? Oh, they're saying, let's go, Brandon." It's not what they were saying, but they're just gaslighting us. They're telling us what they're saying, but people are waking up and going, wait a minute, this isn't what we're seeing here, right?
Man, if that's not a, like, that brings chills up my spine. If that's not like a signal of the end of times, I mean, I don't know what is. It's like, for those who don't know what the Let's Go Brandon thing means, like, because I didn't know about it until a couple of days ago when I was here having dinner with a Bitcoiner, and he's like, "Did you hear about this Let's Go Brandon?" I'm like, "No." And then when he explained it to me, I was like, "What the fuck?" So what are they actually saying?
They're saying F you, Biden.
You can swear on this. They're saying fuck you, Biden.
That's what they're saying. Literally. And now there's a bunch of memes going around. Like, there's one meme that I've seen that just cracks me up. And it's Biden says, it's like Biden and Obama sitting in the office together. And Biden's like, I'm going to butcher the meme, but oh, I guess I have all these friends. And Obama's like, that's not what they're saying, Joe. something like that. But it's become this meme, like, let's go, Brandon. And now when we say that, so they can't censor that, right? Nobody can censor mm-hmm. that. But everybody knows now, when you say, let's go, Brandon, everybody knows what you're saying. So it's become this meme that everybody can use now, that everybody knows what you're saying. But how can they censor that? They can't. It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Well, this is that's an example of how a complex system tries to correct itself, right? Is that, you know, as a central planner, as a moron, you can try and, like, you know, keep things together as much as you can. But, you know, you have these internal feedback loops that are both positive feedback and negative feedback loops that are too hard to control. You just can't clamp everything down. So who, like, this is where it's like, you know, even if there was some cabal of people in the background planning all of this out, there's no chance in hell any of them would have planned out, you know, this externality, which is let's go Brandon becoming a meme, you know, for the revolution. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you can't plan that out.
You can't plan it out. And this is why it fails. A lot of, I see too many people that are very pessimistic on the future, which, hey, I agree. The next couple of years are going to be probably worse. It's going to, unfortunately, but it fails. Eventually the human drive for freedom will always prevail. There's no, as you just said, that they can't contain this. I like to say that just wait until you see what millions of entrepreneurs do when their back is against the wall. Like, we will have more innovation happening than people can imagine. They can't contain it. And so yeah, it does fail. But yeah, the gaslighting, I like to say, you know, in physics, they say you get an equal and opposite reaction. So the more they try to lie to us, the more they try to squeeze us, the more it becomes evident that they're lying, mm-hmm, and the more pushback that we give. So, for example, the government CPI numbers, consumer price inflation numbers, came out this week, and they tell us that inflation's higher than it's ever been. It's really bad. It's 5.4%. Really? Because gas is up over 50%, real estate's up 25%, steaks are up 22%, bacon's up 19%. where did they get the 5% number from? Anybody going to fill up their car with gas or going to buy food at the grocery store? I saw today a gallon of milk, $9 a gallon.
Whoa.
I don't drink milk anymore, but still, like, holy crap, $9 a gallon. And so they're continuing, like, they tell us the CPI is the worst it's ever been, 5.4%, which take that number. That means over 4 years, you lose 25% of your wealth. What?
It's actually even quicker because that's a compounding rate. So
okay, so it's compounding
more than 30. Yeah.
But that's off their number. But the reality is steak's up 22%, and I eat steak every day. So like that's 22%. That means over 4 years, I've lost like almost 90% of my purchasing power or whatever. And so anyway, everyone's seeing this and they can tell us. And then the world is becoming so fake. I don't know if you've seen this, Alex, but dude, the president of the United States, Biden, he's been operating from a fake set.
What?
Have you seen that? No, all his news, he got the shot, all that stuff. It's operating from a set. It's not actually at the White House. They built a set that looks like he's at the White House, but he's not. He's not been at the White House. He's been at a made up set. So that's one thing. Then we have the vice president, Kamala, who has been MIA, won't show her face in public. The other day, she made this video that went viral, and she has all these little kids that are in this new kid NASA program. And she's saying, isn't this great? You're going to be able to see the stars, blah, 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 right? Well, all those kids were paid actors. They weren't actually real kids in the program. Wow. So like, we're literally seeing this facade and how fake it is in real time. Like literally the president is coming to us from a fake White House in a set. I mean, dude, it's coming off the rails quick.
It really is, man. Holy, holy, holy shit. Okay. See, I've been so busy with work and with everything I'm doing with Amber and everything. I've been off Twitter for the last week, and you know, it's crazy. Like I've kind of missed a bunch of this stuff. And now you're like the first conversation I'm having other than speaking with Mike the other day about fuck you, Biden. Like, wow. Anyway,
Should we get to the told you so part?
let's hit on the energy crisis around the world, because I mean, that's something real that's happening today. And for anyone who's not been following, I think this is really important to understand. So can you sort of like run us through what's happening? And then we can sort of dig into why.
Yep. So we'll start with the I told you so part. So over a year ago, it was September of last year, I was on a surf trip down in Puerto Escondido, Mexico, a little surf town, mainland Mexico. There's one paved road in town. The rest of the roads are dirt. It's that small. And we didn't have any power outages. Everything was great. But at the time I was living in California, back home in California, they were having these blackouts that were happening. So I get home and I made a video and I said, what's happening in California is coming for the rest of the country and the world. The headline is warning, it's coming for the world. It got almost 1 million views on YouTube. And the reason why I said it was happening there, and more importantly, why it was coming for the world, was because of policies. The politicians were literally putting policies into place that caused that problem to happen. And I knew that those same policies would be adopted in the rest of the world and would cause the same problems. I told you so, right? So I told you so. So imagine this. It doesn't take a genius to figure this out. But let's say that in California, what would happen as a thought experiment if we were to shut down all the natural gas and coal plants and 2 out of the 3 nuclear power plants? Because we don't want fossil fuel anymore, and then we're going to switch to renewable. So we shut all that down, but we don't build the renewable. I wonder what would happen. Oh, we have rolling blackouts. Duh, right? Like obviously. So they literally shut. They literally shut 2 of 3 nuclear plants, the other fossil fuel plants. They shut them down, but they didn't replace it with reliable, or they have unreliables. They didn't have enough of these wind and solar projects, nor do they produce enough power. They thought, this is an interesting piece that I'll tie in later. He thought, Governor Newsom thought that to meet our mandates of getting off fossil fuel, we'll shut down. But what we'll do is when we need extra power, we'll buy it from our next door neighbors, Nevada and Arizona. But guess what? When California needs extra energy, so do they. And there was no extra energy to sell. And what good does it matter anyway if like I can't kill someone, but I hire you to kill someone for me? Like I can't produce the power, coal power, but I'll have you produce the coal power for me. Like what difference does that make anyway? Stupid. And so that was the policy that caused that in California. And I said, it's coming for the rest of the world. And so all over the world now, we have mandates to, you know, ESG narratives and get off fossil fuels, et cetera, by 2030, you know, all coal plants are gone. By 2050, there's zero net emissions. That's their goal. So throughout Europe, what's interesting is a couple of weeks ago, so the UN is having a big meeting here, I think in the next week or two, to talk about this climate agenda. 2 or 3 weeks ago, they had like a pre-meeting. Boris Johnson, who runs the UK over there, he said, quote, "I want the UK to be the example for the rest of the world." That's what he said. So I was like, great. Well, let's look at that, because the UK is the worst right now in Europe. So the UK, sort of like California, is sitting on massive reserves of natural gas, which natural gas is used to heat homes. It's also used to make electricity. It's also used to make fertilizer, which grows food. It's also used to make CO2, which goes into processing meat, killing animals, processing meat, processed foods, et cetera. And they made mandates where they don't get the natural gas out of the ground anymore. All through Europe, they've stopped producing natural gas. Well, without natural gas, now they can't make the electricity. So we've seen natural gas prices shoot up 800%. Electricity, yeah, so now the natural gas prices went up. So the electricity companies that need the natural gas to make electricity, their prices went up 800%. It pushed electricity prices up 400%. Over a dozen electric companies in the UK have gone bust, gone out of business. 1.5 million customers gone. They're saying that all throughout Europe, people could potentially freeze to death this winter because they won't have the natural gas to heat their homes. The UK thought, like California, what we'll do is we'll just get energy from France because France has plenty of extra energy. Well, one, why does France have extra energy? Well, because 75% of their energy comes from nuclear. They didn't shut it down like everybody else. But two, they didn't have the energy to sell. So the UK didn't get energy from them. And then they also had switched a lot to wind. And I guess this year happened to be a low wind year. Who would have thought? They didn't produce enough electricity. And it continues on. So in the Netherlands, they shut down the largest natural gas plant. It produced 20% of Europe's natural gas. They shut that down. So now all of Europe is dependent on one source for natural gas, and that's Russia. Now Russia controls the natural gas for all of Europe. And so we have this, and like I said, people don't understand the knock-on effect. So we don't have natural gas, prices go up 800%, people freeze to death this year. That's a problem. But more importantly, now the electric plants don't have natural gas to make electricity. They go out of business. Now we don't have electricity. Then we don't have natural gas to go into making fertilizer. If we don't have fertilizer, we don't grow crops. Oh, now we don't have food. We don't have the CO2 that we need to kill the animals and process the meat. So now we don't have meat. Like, this is a big problem. Like a real big problem. And that's just in Europe. Let me just break this down a little bit further. So that's in Europe. Yeah. Well, in the United States, we have obviously power outages that have been happening all over the place, throughout California. But let's jump east. So in Asia, they're having massive problems over there. So in China, China's having problems. So China has a lot of their power coming from hydro. Oh, I guess it didn't rain much this year. We kind of had like a drought year. Oh, we don't have enough energy again. Who would have thought? So now they're trying to get as much coal as they can get their hands on, but the world is running out of coal. China has been ordered to procure every bit of coal they can get. And you know how China gets very, very aggressive like that. When I was building real estate over a decade ago, I remember they were buying all the concrete in the whole world. It was impossible to get concrete because they were buying it up. Well, that's what they're doing with coal today. And what they're also doing is now they're starting to ration the electricity for their production. So of course, China is the production facility of the world, right? All the manufacturing, all the warehouse, whatever manufacturing over there. So now they're having to ration. Factories can only run a couple days a week and they have to kind of alternate which ones get. So at a time when our supply chains are maxed out and breaking down and we can't get products fast enough, and now they have to ration the energy for their factories. That's a problem. Over, and that's in China, South America, same thing. Let's jump to India. India is the one of the largest populations in the world. About 75% of their, 80% of their energy comes from coal-powered plants. They have 135 of them. They have less than 8 days of supply left. 8 days of supply. They're typically running like a month of supply, and they can't get the supply. Why? Because China is gobbling it all up. And the majority of that coal supply comes from Australia, which of course isn't doing anything producing either. So this is happening all over the world for different reasons. It's all backing up onto each other, supply chain constraints, food shortages, all these things. But really the cause is all from one thing, and that's central planning.
Boys, fuck, as you're saying that, like, I just wrote a note here. It's like there's almost like a collision between an insatiable desire to consume and a diminishing capacity to produce. Like talk about, and I don't know if that's a collision or like a stretching, like it's, they're moving the opposite way.
Well, no, it's a collision, I think is a better way to say it, but it's actually caused by the same thing. And it's caused by the same thing, which is money printing.
Exactly.
So the money printing has caused this insatiable appetite. Everyone's got more money in their pocket today, but it's also prevented people from producing.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I'm thinking here. It's like, it's producing the problem in a way that it either collides them or it snaps them apart. Like, you know, because production and consumption are on two different sides. And, you know, if you increase consumption, you're supposed to increase production. But at the moment, we're increasing consumption and decreasing production. And I'm almost kind of envisioning like a two things, they're kind of like coming, like splitting apart. And like, we're probably like here. And if these two remove themselves, then there's like a gap between it, and that gap will just unravel. And basically,
and there's a big wedge that's going. There's a big wedge going in that gap to make it wider right now, and that is forced mandates that are firing people and forcing people to quit their jobs. So at a time when we have those two things already happening, now we're literally forcing people to quit their jobs, which just makes it even worse. I mean, it's insane.
Fuck me, man! What a ridiculous time to be alive. You mentioned that something about the coal supply in India is like down to 8 days of supply or something like that. Or
yeah, so 70% of electricity in India comes from 135 coal plants, and they have less than 8 days of supply left.
Jesus Christ! And what's the normal sort of supply number?
They normally run about a month of supply, but that's not the biggest problem. They usually keep that number, but coal is usually easy to get.
Today
they can't get the coal, which of course is why the numbers are lower, which makes it more important to have a bigger supply.
Yeah, and the socialists are going to blame the capitalists on raising the price of coal, because magically that's what they're here to do, to raise the fucking price for no reason. And before we started this, you kind of made a point, and I've just written a note here, is like the founding fathers, and in whatever capacity they came, whether it was the Americans or whatever, but the founding fathers warned us of this and tried to write up a constitution that would save us from ourselves. But we found ways to tear it up and to get around it, to spite ourselves or to spite them or to whatever. Like, it's just fucking mental. And I think maybe where we could take this conversation, if you'd like to, is why Bitcoin is different, because it's not just a piece of paper protected by bureaucrats or protected by the state. Like, it's math and energy, and it's kind of a new form of constitution that is able to, I don't know if consummate's the right word here, but it's able to do what the founding fathers effectively dreamed and envisioned, but didn't have the technical capacity or, you know, effectively the technology to do so. Like, do you want to dig into that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So talking about that, just to give a little bit more perspective, I said earlier how the leaders, we won't call them elites anymore, but the leaders, quote unquote, these politicians who have put themselves into this decision-making capacity. We talked about how they don't learn from any other thing, right? They don't even learn from their own mistakes, much less others. But I like to look at data, and I like to see what caused good things and bad things to happen. And so, just as an example, as the United States became more and more centralized, and we got the Federal Reserve, and we got the Bretton Woods Agreement, all those things, what happened is after World War II, the United States went into the largest growth burst we've ever seen in any country in all of history. And really, from about 1945 to about 1971, there was just this massive prosperity. And like, what happened during that time? And what's interesting is, as we're talking about this centralization of power slows everything down, it just drags on the economy. So then you would think the opposite would also be true, that if we remove that drag on the economy, things could open up. And so after World War II, we had all the GIs came back home. Most people say that it was the government that caused that boom because they put all that money into the war effort. You hear all the time that war is great for the economy, right? So we hear that mantra. And part of that comes from this, where after the war, we saw that prosperity. But that's not the way that I understand it. And so what happens is everybody came home. In between 1945 to 1947, the U.S. government spending dropped 61%. The government spending dropped 61%. As a percentage of GDP, it would basically be the same today as eliminating all of government spending today. There was 150,000, that's a big number back then, 150,000 government regulators laid off. Regulators laid off, removed the boot off people's neck. 150,000 on a percentage basis, that'd be way more people today. That'd be about a million. Well, it's 150,000 government regulators. There was about a million other civilian employees of the government let go. This is back in 1945. They disbanded agencies like the War Production Board, the War Labor Board, the Office of Prime Administration, all these things, right? They said that we'd have, the Keynesian economists said that we'd have the greatest period of unemployment. Dislocation in the economy is going to be the worst thing we've ever seen. But what happened? Economic growth jumped 10% over 2 years. Like, we can't even get 1% or 2% today. It jumped 10%. The civilian labor force expanded by 7 million workers. They released all these wartime controls that they had on the private sector. And we went into a 10-year boom driven by both the unleashing of the private sector, but also we were on that gold standard. So we had two things, right? Removing the government and having a currency that was kind of more or less stable and globally recognized. And so I think, like I said, we can see the damage and destruction of the central government, but we can also see when you remove that, what could happen. And so I think that's just an important point to look at real quick.
It really is. And that's sort of one of those, I guess, call that part of the, in my mind, like the microcycles that occur during this discovery process. So if I was to sort of zoom out, I would say, and not even I would say, but this is factually correct. A lot of people say that, oh yeah, you know, the US prospered because of the slave trade. And what people don't understand is that the countries or the economies or the jurisdictions or the territories, let's call them territories, that got ahead were the ones who were able to harness energy better than the others. And really, there was two or three things that made particularly the UK and then coming into the US. So it was kind of like Northern Europe and then the US really successful was the harnessing of the horse. That was a big deal. The windmill and the discovery of, it's kind of simultaneously with oil. And then sort of electricity was so that kind of progression. And that really was something in Western Europe and the US that took off. Was one horse represented the energetic output, I think, of eight men, for example. And at one point, a lot of people don't realize this, there was actually more horses in America than there was people for a particular period of time. That's what they used to basically transform the country. And then whale oil was a big thing. And then, you know, as they were starting to run out of whale oil, then they discovered oil in the ground. And it was that discovery of oil in the ground that really transformed America into a superpower. Yep. Like that was what changed everything. And then obviously off the back of that, electricity with Nikola Tesla. And then that is what sort of positioned and allowed America to grow. Now, none of that, zero, zip, zilch, none, nada, was a result of the government. It was a result of private individuals going out there and discovering something. And a lot of people, you know, I know people hate Rockefeller and all this sort of stuff and the Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera, but Rockefeller, the man himself, you know, he was a very shrewd businessman and he was most probably a cunt, as you would need to be when you're, you know, running an enterprise. But where the Rockefeller enterprise goes awry is when they basically partnered with government so that they could create regulatory moats,
right,
to give themselves effectively monopoly power. Before that, they had a localized monopoly over Pennsylvania, but had the government not gotten involved, what would have ended up happening was the Texas oil boom would have outcompeted the Pennsylvania oil boom naturally, because they didn't like Rockefeller and the guys.
Right.
But Rockefeller got in with the government, blah, blah, blah. And this ability to pull a central lever is what started decaying and was one of the early cancers in America. Like, there was that. There was also Lincoln kind of forcing the states to all combine into one United States and be one federal nation. Like, that was the other, you know, initial sort of nail in the coffin, which started moving things away from the entrepreneurial, decentralized individuals creating things,
yeah,
into the institutionalization of innovation. And the thing is, you can't kill the human spirit, you can't kill the innovative spirit. So those things still existed along the way. But what ended up happening, and this is where, you know, me and Gladstein, for example, really diverge, is people like Gladstein, and I don't know if he's changed his viewpoint on this, but they believe that the prosperity that we've seen in the world today is a function of democracy. And my argument is that it's got nothing to do with democracy. It's got everything to do with free individuals trading and operating in a free enough market to prosper. And democracy has been an outgrowth of that, that has been like a leech or a parasite that's grown alongside it, that we haven't noticed until now, because of the incredible amount of prosperity that we've been able to unleash, because we unlocked energy from oil and electricity in a way that created so much room for prosperity. And then the parasite grew alongside it. We've conflated prosperity with democracy, which has nothing to fucking do with it. And here we are now paying for it, because the parasite's gotten so large that it's eaten up all of the buffer of wealth and prosperity that that unlocking of energy has created.
Not just that, but it's also prevented new unlocking and new growth to happen as well. I think it's
What it does. Yeah, the parasite leeches, and it slows down any new thing, and then it eats away at what we've already created. So now we're coming to that point, which is ties back to that earlier analogy of, like, we've got this collision between, you know, this continuing drive for consumption, blind fucking consumption, blind speculation, with a decrease in capacity to produce because the thing's unraveling. You've got that, and the parasite's just getting fucking larger and hungrier and more desperate. And the thing that it's feeding on is shrinking and breaking and falling apart. It's a fucking ugly, ugly time. But there is hope. You know, the hope that exists is that thing that can potentially eliminate the parasite and create a barrier for the host to rebuild itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. One thing I was just thinking as you're talking about it is, typically these parasites, or these these parasites, maybe not parasites as much as we would see bacteria and viruses, is typically they don't want to kill the host. So typically they'll stop at the point before they'll kill the host. Whereas the parasites in politics today, they don't seem to know where that point is, and they're just ready to kill the friggin' host. So that's interesting. But yeah, I think one more thing I'd say about that. I did a video several months ago, and I actually showed through data how wealth of nations has always been by the ability to produce energy. And as a matter of fact, most people think that after 2008, after the great financial crash, where literally the entire global financial system was melting down, and the Federal Reserve jumped and saved the day with their QE. That's when quantitative easing first started, back in 2008. It was a $700 billion TARP loan that went into about $1 trillion. Most people think that that's what saved the economy and pulled us out of that 2008 recession. But actually, the data shows us something totally different. And it was really fracking. It was the oil boom in 2008. To your point, it was a brand new technology that was invented. We didn't have it before. Fracking unlocked all types of energy that we didn't have. It turned the United States into one of the largest producers of energy in the world, and led to over a dozen years of the biggest prosperity this nation's ever had, in spite of the bankers collapsing the entire world. That's what the data shows, in my opinion, shows pulled us out of that boom. In addition, going back to kind of this climate stuff for a minute, not that I want to spend time there, but per the Paris Accord, each nation pledges what they're going to do to fight this emissions. Nobody's mandated. Nobody has to be the same. Everybody just says what they're going to do. So the United States has already reduced their carbon emission by 30% over the last decade. That's a massive feat, which of course it's cost, you know, gasoline goes higher, cars go higher, businesses restricted, but we've reduced 30%. The United States has pledged on their own accord to reduce by another 30%. Wow. The first 30% is one thing. To get another 30%, that's hard. In contrast, India has agreed to not let their emissions grow as a percentage of GDP. So as long as GDP grows, they can grow their emissions. China has agreed to not cut emissions at all. And they've agreed that they'll peak in 2030. And then after 2030, they'll start cutting.
Yeah,
I trust them. The point that I wanted to make here is that the reason why emissions have dropped 30% in the last 12 years is because of fracking, is because of the new technology that not only cleaned up the environment, cleaned up the emissions, but also led to the greatest wealth boom that we've seen in the United States that overcome this great financial crash. So I think that's a key point to hit on.
It really is. It's like if you let people innovate, this is what people, I think, miss out on. This is the cognitive dissonance of the fucking lemmings. It's like, oh yeah, greedy capitalists. Okay, and so all right, capitalists are greedy, fine. Okay, so what does greed mean? You want more for less. Okay, so that's effectively the definition of greed. Wanting more for less means that you have a natural incentive to want to produce more stuff with as little resources as possible. Define for me conservation of energy, conservation of resources again, please. It's literally that. There is no better way to do it. You don't force some, it's like sort of forcing someone to be happy. Like, you can't fucking do it. You let them and they become happy. Like when the natural incentive is to make something more efficient because your driver is is the profit motive, you will become more efficient. Fucking naturally. Yeah, there's going to be some mess. There's going to be some retard fucking employers and some retard entrepreneurs who decide to like exploit people, you know. But what you don't do is like for that 1 or 2%, you don't go and penalize the other 98% and then destroy the incentive for that 98% to make things better.
Because the market will do that on its own. It'll penalize them already.
Yeah, the market will penalize the dumbasses
if the market wants sustainable products, then it will reward companies that build that way and it will penalize people that don't, if that's what the market wants. I think, you know, Rothbard's work really was, or not Rothbard, Friedman, Milton Friedman talked a lot about how if the company's main goal should be profits, and if they focus on profits, then everything else gets taken care of. And so people say that that's greedy. If all you're focused on profits, you need to be focused on community. You need to be focused on doing good, social good, right? But he says that if you focus on profit, you'll do those things. So for example, mm-hmm. you drive by your local high school and you see all the businesses that sponsor the sports teams. Why do they do that? Why would they give money to the high school sports team? Because now their company is profiled and they hope to get business. They're driven by a profit motive, but they're doing good in their community to hopefully get more profit. Mm-hmm. And so if I think that the world wants sustainable whatever, then I'll make that to get more profit, right? And so it's like, while it seems greedy if you don't understand the big picture, if you use that as a guiding light, I'm going to try, to your point, I'm going to try to produce more with less, right? Less consumption. I'm going to try to deliver better products at a better price, you know, all those things. And so, yeah, we've gotten perverted along the way.
We really have. And just for people who are listening, who are like, oh yeah, but you know, what about like, what if we turn the world into like some big, you know, raging billboard where, you know, everyone's trying to just sell someone something, and that's a valid point. But my argument to counter that would be that's valid in a world in which people can like where the advertisers and the companies that basically primarily pay the advertisers are really close to the monetary spigot. So if you sort of follow the breadcrumbs backwards, you start to realize that, you know, the fucking inflation, you know, the money printer effectively filters money through to, you know, the Wall Street buddies, and that they then pump the money into basically, you know, the the big oligopolies that they're able to concentrate the money into. And then those guys transform everything into this fucking billboard of a world. So it's kind of fed to us, and we're paying for something we don't even want to see. And we have very little capacity to not pay for that, because we're getting blindly robbed by the money printer, and it's being transformed into a fucking walking, living, breathing billboard that we don't want. Yeah. Whereas on a Bitcoin standard, if you don't pay for that, and people like start shining billboards in your fucking face, and the only way for them to fund the billboard is by producing a product that you want, and you don't want the product, so you don't buy it, that billboard disappears very, very fucking quickly.
Exactly. So that I couldn't say it any better. I would just kind of clarify what the way I see it a little bit is, as an entrepreneur, I'm trying to basically get something for nothing. I'm trying to do something hard, easier, right? I'm trying to save time, whatever it may be. If I can figure that out, you might want to know about that as well. And I can provide that to you. I'm providing you value in exchange. You give me money, right? And to your point, if I'm sending something out into the market, running a billboard, but nobody wants it, it doesn't provide value to anybody, then no one will buy it, and I'll go out of business very quickly, right? But if it is providing a valuable service to you and you are buying it, then you do want to know about it, don't you? Like, if I could give you something that would give you almost something for nothing, wouldn't you want to know? And of course, the answer would be yes. I would hope somebody would tell me about it. Sometimes you hear about this little thing and it's like, oh, why didn't I know about that sooner, right? So if there's something that's really valuable to you, you want to know. And so it kind of works. It kind of works both ways. I know we're jumping into a rabbit hole on that. We could spend a lot of time talking about that. We could go back to fixing the energy problem if you want.
No. What I want to do, I think where I want to finish this one is again on the Bitcoin piece, and like where I really want to start moving my personal, like I'm doing some writing and some thinking and when we do Market Disruptors Live, I think this is the talk that I'm going to give at it, is this idea of, I've said it to you before, FIRE, Bitcoin, teleportation, and Bitcoin sort of being the midpoint of a sentient species existence. So it's like you've got before Bitcoin and after Bitcoin. And this idea of Bitcoin not just breaking the models, but Bitcoin breaking all the cycles.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, it is a complete shift, and it's an upgrade. Like, there's Homo sapiens and Homo bitcoinicus, and like we transform into something, you know, that is unlike anything before. Like, I think people think way too small when they're trying to understand Bitcoin. They try and place it into the framework of what we've understood or what we've learned to understand over the last X amount of millennia, and we're like, oh yeah, this is, you know, part of the fourth turning. It's like, no.
Yeah.
This is far bigger. So can we talk to that for a bit?
Yeah, I'd love to. That's a great point. So let me add on to what you're saying and kind of expand onto that a little bit. So the first thing that you have to understand, so you mentioned how oil changed the world, right? Unlocking the energy. You talked about how electricity changed the world. Now, what's interesting about those two things is they were invented at different times, about 50 years apart. They were both what we call a technological revolution. They weren't new technologies. They were a revolution. So what's the difference? An iPhone, Airbnb, or Uber, those are new technologies, and that's cool. And it improves our life a little bit. It's a gradual incremental gain. But a technological revolution is something that literally changes the way the world works. So it's not just Airbnb. We already could rent houses. Now we just can do them through an app, whatever. I'm talking about a technological revolution changed the world, where the world works. And so if we go back, there's been five, right? So we had the Industrial Revolution, brought people from farms and the cottage industry into cities and factories, changed the world. About 50 years later, we had the age of the steam engine. So we had manpower and horsepower. Now we had steam engines and we had steel. We could build skyscrapers and bridges that changed humanity. Then we had electricity, of course, as you mentioned. At the time, what's interesting about electricity is at the time, it was kind of like a digital candle. What do I need a digital candle for? Candles have been fine for 5,000 years. I don't need that. Candles are perfect, right? But of course, electricity was a digital candle at the time, but it became more. So kind of to your point, what you just made, humans are really bad at imagining the future. All we can do is imagine a better version of what we have today. Mm-hmm. And so we try in our limited capacity, which we're the smartest species, but in our limited capacity, we try to compare it to something that we know What is electricity? Imagine if when it was first invented, if we were talking about it, what is it? Well, it's kind of like a way we could have a digital candle, right? We could have light all the time. What do we need that for? Kind of a thing. And then, so that was one. And then we had the age of oil, automobiles, and mass production assembly lines. And so again, unlocking that energy and then the automobiles for all of humanity, people walked and rode horses. And now we could transport things. Amazing, right? So these changed humanity. Then 1971 was the age of the microprocessor, which brought us personal computers, which brought the age of telecommunications and the internet and what we're doing today. That was that. And that changed the world, right? We're doing this today. You and I wouldn't be friends without it. And add 50 years, 1971 plus 50 years puts us 2021. And we're witnessing another technological revolution, not a new technology. And to your point, that's why you said like Bitcoin, a lot of people think too small. It's like digital gold. Yeah, it is. It's like digital cash. Yeah, it's that too. Just like electricity was a digital candle. But it will change. It will literally change the world. Right. And so I think it's important to understand that distinction of exactly what's going on here. Now, how does it change humanity? How does it change the world? Well, we didn't know all the ways that electricity would change the world. And we don't understand all the ways that this decentralized technology can change the world either. But some of the things that we can see today would be, you know, Charlie Munger says, show me the incentives, I show you the outcome. And so when we've changed the incentive structure of the entire world, we can start to see some of the ways that the world could change. So for example, one of the big issues, I keep this book here, I reference it quite often, you know, but when we change the incentive structure, so right now your government can take whatever money they want from you, right? They can inflate your money away without even touching your money in the bank. They just inflate it away. So they steal from you that way. They can seize your accounts. Now the government in the US wants to monitor every bank account over $600 so they can get more tax from you. But what if they couldn't take your money from you? What if they weren't able to inflate it away or seize your bank account or prevent you from spending it to different people? What if they couldn't do that? Well, then they would be forced or they'd be incentivized to provide you value in exchange for money. Mm-hmm. So just changing that incentive structure, how does that change the future of the world? Because for all of humanity, think about probably the oldest problem that exists for humankind was you might come steal my chickens. So you and I band together and someone's going to come take our chickens and our goats. So we make a village and we make a kingdom and we make a country, right? It's always about protecting value, protecting property rights. But what if we could have a system where I could cryptographically secure my wealth in a way that takes no money or effort to secure it and nobody could steal it? And so the power balance, that incentive structure of the entire world changes, and that changes humanity.
I'm just writing a note here. It's like transforming the relationship between offense and defense, or defense and attack. Like, it's a couple things I want to touch on here is like as you were describing oil and electricity, you mentioned the word invention, but to me, like, I think maybe
discovery. That
was a slip of the tongue. Yeah, exactly. Discovery. I think that's the word here. Is like, I, you know, and I've kind of been on a bit of a rant recently.
But we discovered it, but we invented a way to
harness it. Yeah, yeah.
To unlock it and harness it. So we did invent the way. So yeah.
Correct. So I've kind of been on this thing lately in trying to describe Bitcoin as something that is a discovery that all intelligent sentient species need to come by. Like, we have to discover it in order for that intelligent sentient species to continue. In the absence of a discovery like Bitcoin, what happens is it doesn't, you know, that species doesn't get through the great filter. It fails. It either turns itself into a gulag, it blows itself up, or it's unlucky enough for an asteroid to come and hit it and wipe it out, right? So like, if that species is able to discover energy money, but then also invent a mechanism to harness it, which is basically we're right in that sort of thing, we may actually pass through the great filter, we avoid the gulags, we avoid blowing ourselves up, and we get so technologically advanced that if an asteroid is coming, we can build an intergalactic fucking baseball bat and hit it. And I say that tongue in cheek, but I'm actually serious, is that we wouldn't at the moment have the ability to build that because we're so economically fucking broken that we can't even figure out how to feed fucking people at the moment. let alone protect ourselves from a fucking asteroid, right? So yeah. Like a species does not get through the great filter until they discover and then invent ways in which to harness energy money, which in our timeline, in our dimension, in our planet, we just happen to have called it Bitcoin. It might be called something completely different on the other side of the fucking universe in another galaxy for another species who has also gone through this historical discovery of gone through rocks and shells, and maybe, you know, their version of gold is another. I mean, gold is actually probably available on their planet too, because we know from the periodic table of elements, gold is available everywhere in the universe. So, you know, every other species who has figured out how to cooperate in a complex manner would have had to discover gold. They too would have gone through fiat. But unfortunately, many of them may not have discovered energy money. They may have drowned themselves in the disease and the cancer of fiat before being able to save themselves. We seem to have gotten lucky with Bitcoin.
Yeah. I want to touch on one other thing, which takes what you're saying, but goes back also what you talked about earlier. You talked about breaking the cycle. I think that's a big piece. I want to touch on that. So you just kind of went on to, you know, maybe they've used gold, maybe they've used fiat, but we've discovered this energy money. But it's bigger than just discovering energy money. It's about breaking the cycle. So I've done extensive work onto cycles in all different types of areas. And we have, if, as far back as you can go from the beginning of time, we have these cycles that repeat because we don't seem to learn our lessons. And so we kind of repeat them over and over. One of the things that basically causes that to happen is the human element. So some people in humanity, maybe they're evil, if you want to call it that. They're greedy, whatever it is. Some people want to control, they want to oppress, they want to manipulate. And so what happens is, since the beginning of time, we had the money changers in the Bible time, we had the goldsmiths, they were trying to manipulate the money supply. Now we have central banks and whatever it is, always trying to get something for nothing, I suppose. And so what we've continued to see is that as people get power, they build too much power, they become oppressive. But most people reject that. They want freedom. So they revolt. There's revolution, which goes back to freedom. And then over time, that oppression builds, 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 tyranny builds. And then we have revolution, freedom. And so it's just continuous cycle that happens. And we don't seem to ever get out of that cycle. It's been never ending, just repeating since the beginning of time. You mentioned breaking the cycle. And so I think that's where we're at. So we've remember, technological revolutions aren't new technologies. They literally change the way the world works. And so that's what we're facing right now. And so with this technology, that's this decentralized distributed ledger technology, decentralized Bitcoin network that nobody controls, nobody can manipulate or control it or change it. We've taken the piece out, the human element out, that's caused us to continue to repeat over and over and over. We've taken that out now and we've replaced it with a decentralized code that nobody can alter, nobody can change, nobody can control. And as long as that continues to be that way, which in our viewpoint as of today, it looks like it will be, as long as that continues to be true, we can go on to a system that could break that cycle, to your point. And because we've taken the one element out that causes it to kind of continually repeat.
Yeah, well, I just wrote a note here. It's like the cycles are a function of humans basically on the path to discovering Bitcoin. You know, so that, like, on the path to discovering Bitcoin, like we find that real wealth is purely time, natural resources, and energy. And what we do to increase the wealth is we mix those together and we turn them into some higher order form of, you know, resource and energy, right? So that it makes our use of time more efficient. So that's what we're always doing. That is the process of innovation. And in order to do that effectively, we need a mechanism to measure, are we doing it good or bad? So we always seem to, like, sort of flip-flop, right? When we come back to doing that, you know, like the first inflation, a lot of people don't realize the first inflation was fucking seashells. Like then the next inflation was like coinage. Like we, you know, created that. There was even inflation on the gold standard. This is how the Spanish Empire fell apart, was they went and stole all the gold from the fucking Indians and the Incas and everything. They came back, they flooded the amount of gold on the market inside Spain. The price of gold tanked inside Spain. Everyone went fucking bust. So lo and behold, you have inflation on gold because they conflated money with gold. When gold was just the object that represented this metaphysical idea of money, and the metaphysical idea of money is represents resources, time, and energy, and their, you know, their transformation into higher order things. So no more wealth was created by bringing more gold. Like, all they did was fuck it up. Yeah. So no more
goods and services were created. They just have more money chasing the goods and services.
That's it. And so it's the same fucking story every single time. And now we've actually reached the zenith. Like, we have genuinely discovered something where we can't do what we did with seashells, nor with gold, and nor with what we're doing today with fucking paper money or digital zeros inside a fake ass bank account. Like, all of that goes out the fucking window. And people have no concept of how that transforms anything. Like, you know, you mentioned before, like, the relationship between, like, being able to protect your private property and someone being able to attack it. It's been that age-old thing, right? Just as important to that is, like, how do you transform the world? Is you transform individual human behavior. And how do you transform individual human behavior? Is you change the incentives that dictate human action. And you do that by placing the money outside of everyone's hands. And then, much like you and I have to go and build a fucking plane to fly and work with the law of gravity, you know, that's how we have to do it. We can't do it with some wax wings and, you know, go and jump off a fucking cliff because we don't believe in gravity. Like, this is sort of, it's so fucking big. And these debt cycles, these, you know, violence cycles, these, all these other things, they're irrelevant after Bitcoin. Like, post Bitcoin, post hyper-Bitcoinization, like, they're irrelevant. So I think we're going to end up on a new standard, which is, you know, these days we talk about, you know, BC and AD. Like, we're going to be talking about BB and AB, like, before Bitcoin and after Bitcoin. That's the timeline of our species.
I like that. I think that could actually happen. I like that. That's a big thing. And if we look at real quickly, just the other alternative that they're pushing. So Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum, he wrote a book called The Fourth Industrial Revolution. It's kind of the playbook that everybody's following. And so don't take it from me. Go read what he said. But what they envision is a world where our brains are hooked into this giant AI cloud. Because central planners don't have enough data, right? They can't gather enough. They can't get the intel. And so they think that if we could get all of our brains and feed it into this giant AI cloud, that the AI cloud could manage everything for us. The cloud could adapt and change everything for us. And think about how opposite that is. So Bitcoin offers us a fixed system that doesn't change, that we can all manage our lives based off a fixed set of rules, versus like a basketball game. You know, LeBron James is bigger and faster than me, but we still have to play by the same rules, right? So we have that fixed set of rules like Bitcoin proposes, or what they want to give us is an AI that can constantly change and manipulate and manage everything, which is kind of funny to think about. If man isn't smart enough to do that, how could man create something that's smart enough to do that? Which is kind of scary, but I think that fails. And so that's the alternative they're pushing. I believe Bitcoin wins, and I believe we have that fixed system.
Well, let's hope, because if we don't win, that's one of the ways we don't get through the great filter, basically. Like, the Klaus Schwab plan, and, you know, what these maniacs, you know, and you know, some people call them evil and all of that sort of stuff. You know, I won't even say that word. I would just, like I said in the podcast that we did when we did Fuck Your Great Reset, I just call them the idiots, like, genuinely the fucking idiots, because they actually think that that is a good idea. They believe that they can remove violence and all this sort of stuff by doing that. And that is not the fucking way. What you do is you actually sanitize the very life out of life and you kill it. So yeah, I can help you solve all your problems, Mark. I'll come and shoot you between the fucking eyes. Then you have no more problems. It's all right.
Yeah.
So that's their solution, is like, let's eliminate life. And then there'll be no more problems.
If all the lions go in cages and we give them one meal a day and their antibiotics, then they don't have any more problems, right?
Even worse, what they want to do is they want to put the lions in cages and then dope them up with drugs to the point where the lions can't know anything. So they're on Soma, for example, you know, to use the Brave New World analogy. Yeah. So the lions, think they're happy and they're just lying in there and they're fucking in a dreamland somewhere. That's literally their solution to the world's problems, is like,
yeah,
let's forget about everything and let's dope everyone up into oblivion. And it's fucking absolute madness. But it's an example of, again, you know, you don't need a conspiracy to explain this. All you need to do is look at, is there a economic consequence to the decisions that they're trying to make? No, there isn't, because we've given them the capacity to just print their way out of all the bullshit. So they make a bad decision, they make a bad action, they fuck something up, press a button, print some more money, it's all okay. And we're like, oh, it's fine, see, don't worry. So there's no fucking economic, there's no consequence to any of the decisions they're making. So until we bring in the consequence, we are fucked. So, and that's why, like, Bitcoin's the only option.
And luckily we have that consequence today. And so what happens is, and this is why China made all cryptocurrency illegal again for the ninth time, but this time it was like all cryptocurrency, but basically they can't allow people to escape their currency, their capital controls. And so the last stage of every empire is always capital controls. Venezuela, when the money is going to hyperinflation, everyone's trying to leave that currency to go to something else that can hold value. And so China has tried to take that away, right, through cryptocurrency. But today we have Bitcoin. And so we have that safety raft, that life raft that we can get into. The more people that leave the system and go over there, the more power they lose. So as you kind of already just said, right, it's the money printing that gives them the power to lock people down and pay them not to work. It's the money printer that gives them the $50 billion they need to enforce this new $600 IRS thing. And so without that money printer, they've lost their power. And so we're just literally moving over here to a different system, taking away their ability. Now, in the past, in Venezuela, we could leave the Venezuelan dollar to go to the US dollar. I could leave the British pound. I could leave the German mark, or whatever, that's gone. Like, that's been gone since the year 2000. So when that left, I could have gone to the dollar or the euro, but we still stay in the system. Right now we have and we could go to gold, but gold's all kept by them anyway. So now we have a system that we can actually escape and get out. And it's offensive and defensive at the same time. So it's defensive, where I'm moving my wealth that can't be taken, stolen, manipulated, censored, etc. But it's also an offensive move, because we're literally defunding them and taking their power away at the same time.
Yeah, it's fucking poetic. It's such a beautiful way to rug pull whilst simultaneously, like, you know, protecting yourself. I think actually that's what I was gonna say. It's a step change to what happened before, right? Like, even to your point, it's like, you know, in the past you could escape currency, you could even escape country. Like, now, you know, there's very few places you can even escape to. So that's going. So we're kind of like tying back to sovereign individual. It's like, you know, our only escape now is into cyberspace. So to sort of port our wealth into that, to kind of try and build some parallel things, you know, in terms of like energy and food, so that we can outlast this clusterfuck, because it's going to fall apart. It is 100% going to fall apart. The thing is, we don't want it to fall apart on top of us. Right. You know, we sort of want to step away while the leaning tower of fucking Schwab, you know, falls down.
Yeah. And it's fallen apart. And I think, you know, Lenin's famous quote, not that he's someone I want to quote, but, you know, famously said that there's decades where nothing seems to happen, and then there's days where decades seem to happen. And I think that just couldn't be more true than there is right now. And you mentioned earlier the fourth turning, this kind of generational theory, and it says that, like, all the change happens in that fourth turning. And so that's kind of what we're seeing today. Nobody today, I think, could have imagined that we would be right here today, especially you coming from Australia. You couldn't have guessed this 18 months ago. Like, holy crap. Could you imagine Australia being where they're at today, you know, 18 months ago? And so things are starting, and now, well, maybe you could have.
18 months ago, I did, for sure. I've actually, you know, and you can look at my old work. I've always said Australia will be one of the first places to become a dictatorship if things get bad. I've said that for many, 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 many years. Yeah. But I didn't think it would get this bad this quickly.
I just know for a decade I've been waiting for this to happen. I've been working on, you know, building stuff in other countries and passports for literally a dozen years. I've been focused on politics, not because I want to engage in it, but I want to know when the walls will close in the US, because I want to leave before those walls are closed in. So I've been waiting for this to happen for a dozen years, but now all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, I didn't know it was going to happen so quick. So it's like, I've waited for a dozen years, and now all of a sudden in 6 months, I can't believe what's happening in the US. And so all that change, you know, happens right there at the end. It's unraveling at a more rapid rate. So like I said, right now, the energy crisis all over the world. Now, 4.6 million people quit their jobs in the US. Now we can't unload ships. Like now we don't, we can't deliver babies. Like what? Mm-hmm. Like that's happened in the last 2 weeks. We can't deliver babies. Like how do we pause that? Right. And so things are starting to unravel faster and faster and faster. And so you just kind of made the point that things are crumbling and they're crumbling really fast, and it's only going to accelerate. I give it a couple more years at most. Before the pendulum really starts moving back the other way, maybe, 3 to 5 years max before this system is just crashed.
Yeah. Welcome to fucking complex systems. So dude, I guess in the spirit of why we did this episode in the first place, and what it's called. So like I told you so. So complex systems get out of control way quicker than anybody, like any planners can imagine, like, and as much as they want to plan shit and stuff like that, like what we need to do is become, and I hate to use Talibisms because he's such a cuck, but we need to become anti-fragile, and we need to be able to create our own positive feedback loops so that we can, not be in a position where, even though we told you so, that we ended up, having the building fall on us, as it was just sort of mentioned. So I know you're doing Market Disruptors Live in Miami. I'm going to be speaking there, which is going to be fun, but, thank you. And like, not just fun, but like for me, I've been rallying and, I'm organizing a bunch of people to come up for it. But for me, it's not just the fun aspect, but it's also just it's the literal live version of building networks of individuals who are all going to come in handy. So actually, funny enough, when we did our last little show together, I was doing the Bank to the Future raise, etc., and there was a guy who invested in the company via Bank to the Future, and turns out he's like he's creating like a sovereign health thing similar to what Dr. Bitcoin was doing, he's sort of doing that on his own, kind of newish to Bitcoin and sort of navigating his way around. And I got him, he's coming to the event and stuff like that, but this is the kind of people that I feel like we're going to attract to the event. And like, for me, this is the kind of place to fucking be for us to figure out the critical networks that we need across all the dimensions that matter, so that we can build a metaphorical, virtual, and actual bunker whilst this shitstorm passes. So can you talk a little bit about like the plan of the event, when it's happening, a couple examples of who's going to be speaking there, and sort of the theme, so people know, can get.
For sure. I love what you just said there, which is such an important piece, which is the community, right? Everybody's probably heard the saying that you're, the sum of the five people you hang out with, things like that. And I constantly hear people saying, Mark, I don't have any mentors. Like, who can I follow? Things like that. And I just say that, you hear, cliches, but your network is your net worth, et cetera. And so like, it really is so important, the people that you have around you to talk to, especially in times like this where the whole world's going crazy and you need to like talk to some sane people. And so I was going to do this event next year. I wanted to have more time to plan it, but I'm afraid at the rate that we're going, we may not be able to go to a live event next year. And so I was like, look, I'm just going to have it this year. And so I think it's super important. Come while you can, meet people that are like-minded. The goal of it is basically to try to help people navigate these next couple of years. I believe there's massive hope and prosperity on the other side. I'm not all doom and gloom, but I do think, unfortunately, the next couple of years are probably going to get worse. I hate to say that, but I also think in times of volatility, if you're not paying attention, it's very difficult, very bad. But if you are paying attention, it could be the greatest opportunity of your life. I know you're building into this opportunity. I'm with you on that. And I think, this is going to present big opportunities. And so I wanted to have an event to bring people together, to hear from about 14, 15 people who are really focused on this, and try to figure out what's going to happen over the next couple of years, but more importantly, what to do about it. And we're going to attack it from a couple of different angles. And so I kind of wanted to look at it from the big side of like the problem. So we'll have people talking about the macro political side and the financial side. And then we'll dive into like build, grow, protect your wealth. So we'll talk about, making money. So we'll have guys there talking about, let's kind of talk about some of that. So, and then we'll build, grow, protect your wealth. And then we're going to talk about health and freedom, which are big pieces. So I got Dr. Joe Mercola coming. I mean, he's the godfather of natural medicine. He's also one of the biggest targets of censorship today. So he's coming. He's going to talk about health. I think it's time to look at freedom as an asset. I think it's time to look at health as an asset. Without health, you have nothing. We have Dr. Mercola there. I have Gerald Celente come in to talk about. He's been writing the Trends Journal for 40 years. So he's going to talk about these trends and how he's predicted all these things. So he's coming. So if you want to get a good idea of those things, I got George Gammon coming to talk. I mean, he's a legend today. And so he'll be kind of giving us this macro viewpoint. We got Greg Foss coming. So he's going to talk about the bond market. The credit markets are what drives everything else. So he's going to explain that and what he thinks is going to happen in the credit markets and how that pushes things downstream. I got Brent Johnson. He's the guy from the Milkshake Theory. He talks a lot about currencies and money. And so we can start to understand as these currencies move, what happens. I got Breedlove coming. Of course, we'll be talking about Bitcoin and what that means, money, et cetera. I got Stefan Lavera come in. So we'll talk about life on the run, living a life on the run, which I think you're equally suited to talk about as well. We have our good buddy Joel from Untapped Growth coming to talk about citadels and sustainable living in the United States, you know, what you can do to protect yourself and things like that. We got Katie the Russian coming to talk about passports and sovereignty and tax reduction strategies. I have my other buddy Yaya's coming to talk about asset protection, how to move your wealth and assets outside of the view of anybody, including the government. Some crazy wealth asset protection strategies. So that kind of covers it. So go from the politics, like the trends, the politics, the financial side, into the different assets, the bonds, the stocks, the Bitcoin, obviously. We'll talk about, I have Mike Dillard coming to talk about building cash flow, asset protection, sovereignty, freedom, health, et cetera. So if you want to, it's like what I think is like all the things that you need to know to really navigate the next couple of years. Because if we survive this and come up, I think there's great prosperity. So you'll hear from all that, meet other people, like we said, but also meet the speakers. Yeah. This is going to be a small event. It's only a few hundred people. So come, you meet the speakers, make new friends, you know, join them on Twitter. You and I established a relationship online, but now we've hung out many times. And really, it's that in-person event that's just so much more powerful. So anyway, that's it in a nutshell.
Big time. Dude, I'm super, super looking forward to it. So I've been shilling at myself to like people that I know personally that I meet. And I've been actually trying to be kind of selective about who I invite to this. So I'm like, look, you know, I have a chat with someone first. I'm like, okay, I want you there because I think you can strengthen the kind of networks. Yeah. And there's been some interesting people that I met in Costa Rica that I'm going to be bringing up for the event as well. People with like what one guy I really want to talk to you about, because he's like the granddaddy of he built some of the first fully independent aquaponics/permaculture farms that were independent of everything from an energy, food and everything perspective. And universities from all around the world would come and study it and everything. So like, he ended up having to sell it because he was, you know, had a divorce with his wife and she took half. Poor bastard. But, you know, he's like this kind of savant engineer/architect/builder. So he's done everything from farms to houses to he rebuilds cars, builds motorbikes from the ground up, knives, like you name it, like everything. He just can build anything. So, you know, he and I had an interesting catch up and we're doing some stuff together. I'm trying to get him up, but he's been sort of on this sovereignty thing for the last 15, 20 years. Like he left the US almost 20 years ago and he bought himself he's invested in land all around the world, but he bought effectively like this big parcel of land to build a citadel. And it was funny because I basically, you know, since we sat down, I just went into orange pill him and, you know, a comment that he said to me, he said, I was sovereign in all other capacities, he said, except the money piece. And he's like, this Bitcoin thing sounds like it just like is the last piece that locks it all together. And I was like, it is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He was like, his exact words were like, that's the piece that I was missing. He said, I kept running up against something. And, you know, he was fucking around with gold and this and that. But it was like, he said, it just didn't work. So So anyway, this is the kind of people that are going to be there. So I fucking can't wait, man. This is like, for me, like I'm speaking at a bunch of other events this year, but this is the one that I'm like genuinely looking forward to the most. Like I'll be in Salvador, I'll be in Kansas, I'll be in Atlanta and all that. But this one I'm fucking pumped for, man. It's going to be a really good flavor of people.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So it's going to be awesome. So come hang out.
Sweet. Sweet. And last quick thing as well. You and I, well, you're going to be writing in the Bitcoin Times edition 4. So that is also going to be coming out in November. I think it'll be coming out like a week or two after the event. We're trying to like launch it for Thanksgiving. So that's going to be, you know, me, you, Alan Farrington, Craig Warmke, Peter Sinonghi, Brandon Quidham, and Thomas Strohlite. And the theme is going to be Bitcoin, a new hope. So as usual, it's available for free. At some point, I will print them. I'll print limited edition for people that they can purchase. But yeah, at this point, like I'm fucking super pumped for the content that's going to be in there. And kind of like I said, my topic is going to be Bitcoin. Sorry, it's going to be Fire Bitcoin Teleportation. And you know, the subheading is Before Bitcoin and After Bitcoin. So I want to kind of like future pace people. And that's also the talk that I'm going to be giving at Market Disruptors. I really want to get people riled up, give them some hope.
Yeah, the future pacing. It's good. We need to give people that hope and tell them what's coming. I can't wait.
Fucking oath, man. All right, my man. Quick recap then. Where can people find you so they can follow your work?
Yeah, so if you have show notes, obviously you can link to it down below. I make a lot of content on YouTube. Just search Mark Moss. I also have a podcast. You can search Market Disruptors or Mark Moss. And then if you want to come check out the event, just go to marketdisruptorslive.com. And you'll find everything there.
Awesome. All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it. Finally, we did this actually. And being episode 51, you're like the first one in the new series.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Alex.
All right, brother. For sure.